Hello and welcome to the Business Marketing Club podcast for business marketing people who want to get on and stay ahead. In each episode, we'll be offering insight and inspiration on a key current topic, advice on how to climb the career ladder, and top networking tips. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a business marketer and I'm chair of the Business Marketing Club Network. In this episode, I'll be speaking to freelance B2B social media specialist, Beth Lloyd, to Oliver Matejka, the B2B copywriter at Unmind, and to Sara Fernandez, marketing and communications manager at Hitachi Vantara, about the place of social media in the marketing mix today. Plus, Scott Jackson will take us on his marketing journey to being managing director of Through the Eye. And David Price and Grace Pryor of TNL Partners will share some great B2B marketing examples and what they've learned from them. Hashtag, are you ready? Social media was a new marketing channel in B2B just 10 years ago. Since then, it's changed rapidly from a shiny new thing that everyone needed to be involved with without really knowing the reason why, into a more focused and defined but less utilized function in our channel mixes. I have a number of guests joining me today to talk about the role of social media in B2B marketing in 2020. And first up, freelance B2B social media specialist, Beth Lloyd. Beth, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for having me.
So what should be the role of social media in the marketing mix today?
I think it's grown rapidly in terms of importance. Like you say, you know, it was once used as a very ad hoc add-on to the more tangible, great traditional marketing that we're used to. But more and more we're seeing that it's actually got a presence to be able to generate awareness at scale and really, really rapidly. So for me, the role of social in the mix needs to be as equal as anything else that B2B do, especially in that services space where you're relying heavily on content. You need to be able to turn that into bite-sized pieces that can engage people quickly. Without that, who's coming to your website? Who's downloading your reports? Who's going to contact you for potential partnerships in business? So I think as well, something that needs to be considered is the variation around social. It can be used very much in silo still. And a lot of organizations seem to think that organic social, so what you don't pay for, what you own on your channel, is the golden bullet. And there's no such thing. You need an audience first, and you've got to build that. So a way to achieve it would be investing a decent proportion of your marketing budget, or especially if you're focusing on digital, then a good chunk of that into the paid space. What that can do is generate the audience on mass scale, give you a smaller pool of people who will then hopefully follow you that you can start to nurture over time. And actually integrating that fully into the digital customer journey is where the best effectiveness happens.
And how much do you think that situation has evolved just very recently? I mean, if we compare things to, say, a year ago, is it that different?
For me, my experience, yes. But it's a lot of it's down to culture as well. A lot of business organizations still, even though it's a decade old, believe that this is new and we're just dabbling with it. And absolutely for a marketer, and especially anyone in the digital space, this is one of the core parts of your channel mix. For me, a year ago, we're still trying to prove a little bit of the value. So you might dabble with a bit of budget here and expect great results to happen. And then you do a bit more organic and you're trying to push. But what we've seen over the year is that as organic content output is increasing, engagement is actually decreasing. And that's across the board. We're seeing that in all industries as well, so social generally. When you put money behind it first, you can reach a targeted audience much more effectively and quickly. You then have a richer contact list to return to. So for me, using organic is great, but it's a great way to engage an audience who already know about you. Spending money up front to make sure that they know about you is critical. And then the third part of it would be your earned media value. And that can be anything from press to influencers. And that's how you get the resonance and momentum going forward. And I think that's going to be something that will come in more prominence over the next year or two as well for B2B.
How about if you look at this by type of business? So I don't know, SME versus corporate, or by business sector, or by whether a business is growing rapidly or not. Are there some kind of profiles of business that suit social media better?
No, I believe it's suitable for everyone, absolutely. But in terms of business, it can be full of contradictions. So, you know, the leaders want hard results and quantifiable metrics, but it's becoming increasingly hard to prove the value of that organic social data. So unless you've already got someone at the top who understands that it's a process and you've got to evolve it over time, even though it's fast to execute, you're still getting similar timeframes for when someone eventually becomes a customer. So you've got to be much smarter about how you integrate it and then prove the value through your attribution models at the other end when reporting.
You mentioned results a little bit at the top there, because I was going to ask you, well, what results do you typically find social media can achieve?
Okay, so my favourite is that you can generate at least 25% of your new contact generation using LinkedIn as an advertising tool. Wow. I've seen that with some of PA's fantastic campaigns over the years. And that is really when you focus and hone in on your target audience. You know what your goals are, you know exactly what you're looking to achieve, and you measure it then by the quality of contacts that are coming through your door. We use rich content that someone can download to make sure that it's a valuable exchange. You know, you give us our data, we give you some interesting insight that you wouldn't get elsewhere. And when you do that really well, it absolutely can contribute up to 25%. I think when you consider that businesses pay, if you're lucky, 10% of your overall budget towards social specifically, and then to get that return actually becomes quite a valuable asset to the mix.
And how about looking at this internally? How do businesses tend to govern their social media?
Okay, so policy is really important, but it's also really boring. So for a big organisation, you absolutely need a strong governance model. But when you look at how you want your teams and colleagues to interact with social, they're often really off-put by a big corporate policy document. So what we tended to do, and what I'm specialist in actually, is taking that policy and turning it into something really useful and tactful that an individual can then say, okay, I'm maybe not as afraid of this now, and I'm going to go and give it a go. And actually, interestingly, what we're seeing at the moment in light of the new ways of working during this pandemic is that we're relying more on technology to do our business and go about our day to day. So those people that were super nervous before are putting themselves front and centre all of a sudden and finding tools like Twitter and LinkedIn to be the cornerstone of their day to day. And for me, this is exactly what it's meant to have been used for all these years ago.
And finally!
That's quite exciting. Yeah, finally, everyone's catching up. So maybe small positive.
So what if we look even further ahead then? So if you have your crystal ball and look at the future of social media, what innovations do you think are on the horizon that businesses should watch out for?
Okay, so I think one of the big things that we've dabbled with in the past is using social not just as a promotional tool, as very much, you know, broadcast, hello, we're over here, you know, look at us, and actually taking a step back and using the data that you can get from it to inform your strategies and campaigns up front. There's a really cool company called the Social Research Lab, founded by Dr. Gillian Ney, and she's a pioneer in that area. And she really looks at how you can utilize social data from open API platforms and turn that into useful and tangible insight, not only about our behaviors as a society, but how you then might be able to apply that in all different parts of the business. It shouldn't be something that's then left within the marketing department. It can expand into the sales teams. It can be looking at customer insight teams, even colleagues on the ground when they're working directly with clients. I've used data before to look at a client's current situation and assess the needs of a particular service. So you can go and do an assessment of how people are talking about maybe COVID at the moment, what the biggest fears are and how we can help, and use that data to help drive a new service or allow businesses or government organisations to focus on exactly where the most important areas are that need to be focused on. And without that data, whether it's social or not, you're kind of flailing around in the dark. So for me, that's going to be the biggest shift. Not entirely radical, but something that's going to take a lot of skill, precision and dedicated resource or a company to kind of back you up as well and give you that insight that you need.
B2B social media specialist Beth Lloyd, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's get a different perspective on social media now. My next guest is Oliver Matejka, who is B2B copywriter at Unmind. Oliver, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Can you cite an example of where copywriting works well in a social media creation process?
It works well when it's, I think, authentic and honest and kind of conversational, whereas in paid social, in my experience, there's kind of a different objective, or the success is defined by the engagement rates rather than perhaps an expression of tone of voice and resonating with a certain audience. For instance, I worked for a very kind of marketing-led B2B tech company previously, and we put a huge amount of focus on paid social. And so there'd be a lot of money going into like promoting these tweets, and so much thought going into the sort of strategy behind it and the target audience. Whereas the bit kind of at the top of the iceberg where people see the copy was dictated by the engagement that the post got. For instance, the key was to get software demos. And we found that the ad creatives that worked time and time again were pictures of confectionery, like cakes, really kind of just lowest common denominator, like simple.
But that's imagery rather than copy.
Imagery. And so the copy that accompanied that would be free dot, 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 or so, you know, quite sort of impulsive, simple messages. And so, yeah, there's a trade-off. I guess it's why the Sun newspaper sells so well. It's that they kind of give people what they want. They appeal to the emotive side rather than what we kind of think in B2B to be a more deliberate and rational world. Whereas, I don't know, I think social media is, it kind of clubs B2B and B2C together in that we are at the end of the day communicating with people.
So let's be let's be a bit hard-nosed about this and actually look at the results that you generate through your social media. Can you really show in results that good copywriting makes a difference to your social media performance?
I think it's a good question, and it all depends on the objective of the posts that we're talking about. If it's to generate engagement as a kind of branding piece, or if it's to get conversions on content downloads, it's another way, or, you know, even more so to go marry on first date and get a demo booked and make a proper sale from it. So it depends so much on the post itself. There's, for instance, data to prove that odd numbers outperform email numbers in terms of titles and click-through. You're much more likely to click on a title that's 7 ways to prove the measurability of a social post compared to 6 ways. God knows why.
You get more value.
Well, there we are. That's that one solved. And similarly, emojis. We're told they make a social media post pop, but then it might, not be the best approach for selling something that is more, dry and practical. Yeah. There's data to prove all sides, I think it can be.
Okay. What's your advice to listeners considering their social media copy in B2B today?
I think that there's an awful lot of noise out there, and the stuff that cuts through is the stuff that is authentic and honest and bold. There's a lot of kind of, social for social's sake, and you'll schedule an hour on a Monday morning to populate your social media calendar schedule, and then it's just broadcast out to your poor audience. I think that less is more, and even better is if it's something that's a little bit different.
Wise words. Oliver Mateshka, B2B copywriter at Unmind. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me, Dave. It's been great.
My third guest today is marketing and communications specialist at Hitachi, Sara Fernandez. Sara, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
So tell us a bit about Hitachi to start with.
Sure. So Hitachi, as everybody knows, is a very big enterprise. It's founded in Japan, but it has many different divisions. And I particularly work for Hitachi Vantara, which is the company that takes care of data for customers from the infrastructure and storage to the integration of that data, analytics, IoT, big data, and that's specifically the side of the business that I take for. So I am part of the digital solutions side of the business, and it's, let's say it's the software side of the business, so it's very dynamic and very interesting.
So it sounds like you're absolutely the person to be asking about what the role of social media then is in the marketing mix that you have.
Yeah, so I am particularly, and everybody knows me, know that I am a big advocate of social media, because I think the way we communicate nowadays, especially to all the businesses, have changed massively. To start with, I think the audiences are changing, and from people from an older generation, so the baby boomers, is changing to Generation X, and also millennials. So millennials are starting to be decision makers for a lot of businesses, and we have to bear in mind that the way they consume content and they consume information, it's completely different from what their parents or an older generation did. So these people look for information online a lot. So you need to be there and you need to be seen several times before they even have any interest on you. And the best way is to start a dialogue with them on social media, listen to what they have to say, and also respond with the right approach and with the right content, bearing in mind the context as well. So it's not about being, a thought leader anymore. I am the best. I am very my product is the best. It's how my product can help you, overcome your pain points. And how can we establish, a mutual benefit relationship? I can help you with, certain content. I can help you understand things, and you can help me understand what's going on in your business. So I can help you. So I think that's the key nowadays. And I use it, as I said, and as I have been explaining, as a tool. So social media for me is a tool to understand my customers' journey, what they're looking for, but also listen to them and establish a connection and being the human face of the brand. Because at the end of the day, that's what people want. People want to buy from a human being, not from, you know, a brand.
Can you just give us a bit more context there? So if I compare social media to other channels to market, for example, I don't know, events or DM or so on, what sort of proportion of investment does Hitachi put into social media versus the rest?
That's changing in the past year, I think, since we've had a new CMO, he came like about a year ago. A lot of things are slowly changing. You have to bear in mind that this was, you know, a very complex company and it's a very complex company and it has a heritage and it's difficult for such big enterprises to change their approach to communication in this sense. But bit by bit, we are changing the tone of our voice. And you can see that if you go to our corporate LinkedIn page, for example, the way we talk to customers now on Twitter, it's about having a much more approachable voice. And as I said before, replying to what our customers are saying online, replying to their queries online, not only talking about yourself. So we don't talk about how great Hitachi Vantara is and the products and the services and this, that, and that. But we also want to talk about the people that make Hitachi Vantara good, what's going to happen, what's going on in different parts of our you know, departments in different regions, how is people coping with coronavirus, for example, and get to know a little bit more, you know, what's behind the brand, which is basically the people that make Hitachi Vantara. And that, you know, we try to utilize a little bit of humor now, because I think it's one of the best approaches when you want the audiences to listen to you, being respectful, but being a little bit humorous. And I think, you know, that's a great approach. So it's slightly changing. I would say it used to be social media wasn't like a big thing when I joined the company more than 3 years ago, but now it's slightly changing to, you know, a core part of our communication. And because we want to, yeah, Hitachi wants to be perceived in a different way. It's a very innovative community that it's here to help customers approach and you know, achieve their data challenges. So if we want to get to that level, and we are, then we need to communicate accordingly.
So there's some great insight in the way that you've answered that. You've told us about a focus on awareness. You've told us about how the approach that you take to social media is very interactive rather than one way. Looking at social media more generally, do you think there are types of business or situation that are suited for social media marketing more than others?
No, I used to think that many years ago when social media was still, a very like slightly some companies did use it as a trial, as an experiment. But now I think everyone can use social media, anyone, any company. It's gonna benefit from social media, whether if you're selling shoes or if you're selling software, or I don't know, you're a public sector, whatever, because the key nowadays is to communicate with customers and audiences, and having a specific voice in your market, and having your own voice. So anyone could use social media. Any company should be using social media to communicate with their audiences, as long as they add value to what they communicate. As long as just not like shouting their products, services, whatever, I think they need to redefine the way they communicate. Like maybe, for example, if you're more a B2C, well, you know, it's easier sometimes because you can create a lot of fun games and stuff like that. But if we are on the B2B arena, which is where I've been working like most of my professional life, you can also take some advice from B2C and try to, you know, apply to B2B, because the people that are decision makers in the B2B arena are humans as well, and they like to read, like, you know, very interesting content, but at the same time entertaining as well. Nobody wants to read like a boring white paper anymore. Maybe if you try to communicate instead of, you know, having a white paper, you have something more interactive, such as an infographic, an animation, something like that. You know, your customers and your audiences are going to consume that content. They are more likely to consume it. So in my opinion, any company could make a very good use of social media.
And what, so if I do apply social media, what sort of results can I expect to achieve?
Well, this is something that a lot of companies get wrong, in the sense of, you know, we are going to do social media to sell more, which, you know, ultimately that can be the case. But that primarily what you should be using social media for is to establish a connection and a relationship with your audience. Because as I said before, the way people buy and purchase, especially in B2B, have changed massively. And in B2B, we know that it's not like an overnight decision, because, you know, some trades can take a lot of, you know, time, processes, money. So they need to see your content and your voice and reach you and you know, establish a connection with you and talk to you several times. Obviously, there are all the marketing approaches, but social media is the more interactive, the most interactive and immediate conversation that you can have with your customers. So I really think that that's the approach that we should have. I think it's the beginning of a business deal. It can be the beginning of a business deal, but you should be like taking it as a form of communication more than a business deal, because for business deals and a more like commercial interaction, you can use social selling, which is related obviously to social media, but it's a different approach. Let's say the second part of it. The first part is social media, and that's when you establish the connection with your audience.
And the sort of approach that you've described is a very interactive one. That strikes me as something that is quite difficult for businesses to be able to govern. Because, you know, if it's just a one-way campaign, it's very controllable. And all of a sudden, if your customers are answering back, it becomes actually a more unwieldy beast. So how do you go about governing that sort of approach?
Well, that's another thing that I think some companies don't get. And in order to have a very good social media plan and social media plan, you have to have very good professionals and, you know, specialists running the social media in your company. You cannot tell. I mean, I've been working in marketing for more than 10 years, and, you know, I'm older now, and I know exactly what I'm good at and what I'm not good at. So not everybody is good at something. I have a lot of, you know, colleagues who are very good at certain things that I suck at. But I think my strength is, you know, the way I communicate to audiences, my social media skills, social selling, whatever you can call it. So I think the best approach is to find in your team the people who are good at that and give them the opportunity to take that on board and take ownership of that, or look for external professionals to, you know, to take the approach. Because if you don't have good people or good professionals doing it, your social media is not going to work. Not everybody can do social media. I mean, the whole team and the rest of the teams and different departments can help. So I always said that social media is something that should be supported by the whole company, but there must be someone, you know, leading that. And that person or that team should be the one like giving directions to the rest of, you know, the teams and the employees. Like, for example, giving them training on social media approach, giving them training as well on social selling, on employee advocacy, on, for example, their own personal brand, how to establish it, etc. But you should have a specialist team that, you know, can take on board everything that the company needs to, you know, take to, the, to take it to the next level, I would say.
You've described quite articulately, I think, Zara, the innovations and changes that you've seen in social media over the course of the last sort of five to 10 years. But what about the future? What innovations in social media would you say are on the horizon?
Right now it's very, you know, unpredictable with the, you know, what's going on in the world. But I think this can be actually an opportunity for marketers and specifically for social media marketers to take a different approach to social media, which I think is going to be more personalized messaging, more tailored content, utilizing context in a better way. To approach your audiences and give them relevant content. The time is now way. And I think also taking a bolder approach to marketing from being a traditionally cautious brand, now is the time to think outside of the box and be bold to take on board, you know, all those things that we've always been very like afraid of, say. Obviously, you have to bear in mind that you're still a brand and you not you need to have like certain like you know, guidelines. But I think people, especially now that we live in lockdown, are eager to see a brand like talking directly to their customers, having that human approach. And being more approachable at the end of the day, which I think it's going to be the future from now on.
So there you go. Seize the opportunity. Sara Fernandez, Marketing and Communications Specialist at Hitachi. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dave.
Time for a B2B marketing journey now. Scott Jackson is Managing Director of Through the Eye. Scott, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So what's made you the brilliant B2B marketer that you are today?
Who told you I was a brilliant B2B marketer is my first
question. Just reading what it says on the queue.
Oh, it's very kind. I think, you know, I started 25 years ago and I used to work in radio. So I was a radio producer and was lucky enough to start my career working for a company called Marketeers, who are one of the sort of biggest radio content producers and suppliers of guests to the BBC network and commercial. And I would spend probably 8 to 10 hours a day engineering behind the scenes, but working with various marketing directors, chief marketing officers, CEOs, CFOs, marketing managers, PR managers, corporate comms directors, on all manner of things from, you know, we did the first live wine tasting. So we would send cases of wine around the radio network and then spend all afternoon with the PR director for a well-known wine brand at that time, tasting the delights all the way
through.
Sounds
like the perfect job.
Well, I was 21, fresh out of uni, so it just felt like a normal day to me. And then it was the height of the national lottery, so they were giving away a lot of their grants, and we're doing a lot of work with Sport England. So we'd be working right with the community at grassroots with them, and everything in between. And since then, I've worked with, you know, I've done, you know, car launches for Rolls-Royce and Nissan and BMW. I've done some major sort of change communication programs for the likes of BAT or GSK. I've sat in webinars for companies. All the time, you're always, you know, one of the great things about my, you know, luxuries of my career, if you like, is I just get to spend time with the people that do the marketing, and some really smart people, you know, that I get to work with. And sometimes it's just for a day, and sometimes, as you know, it can be for years through a retained relationship, or just, you know, as clients move on. So I think, because, you know, I'm a producer by definition, audio is my passion. As much as I love video with the video agency, I listen, and just being alongside those kind of people gives you that opportunity to learn firsthand. And then when you do have that downtime with the chief exec of, you know, the country's largest building society, or a member of, you know, I'd like to say I sat down with the Pope, but unfortunately I didn't. I just handled his live stream when it was the inaugural visit to Abu Dhabi. But when you're working with the people that are working on those kind of massive comms issues and things, and you just get that chance to ask just a couple of questions and hear what they say, it just feeds into everything that we do. And then, of course, we have a lot of, you know, a huge breadth of clients at the agency I run through the eye, where, you know, we can be working on a financial services brand one day, we can be working with a major sports brand the next. You know, I've mentioned some of the car brands we work with, some of the pharmaceuticals. And you just take bits and pieces from what other people are doing and see whether you can apply it. You know, I spent many months working with a management consulting firm, and just the way that they approached how they understood a client's brief is something that we interrogate on a day-to-day basis in the way that we work. So, but for me, it's always about the audience. You know, that comes back down to my music background and working in radio on the broadcast side. But then, you know, as you know, marketing channels are diversified, content is still the king of that. So, you know, but distribution becomes King Kong, if you like. So podcasting now, and obviously we're on one here, but it's knowing your audience and taking it to them, really, and listening to what they want to take on board and use for their benefit, I guess. And that's what always excites me, that we get the chance to take people on their own journey to where they need to get to help our clients, you know, become famous, or, you know, address a problem that they have.
So you've been lucky to spend time with I guess your target customer, and therefore to get into their heads a little.
Yeah, and that's it, really. But understanding people, and then understanding behaviors, and then understanding what drives those behaviors, if you can work that out and do it quite quickly, then you can produce the relevant content. And I think, you know, my background was in news, and that kind of energy and always on philosophy is still true today, 25 years later, as it was then, and relevancy.
What sort of skills do you think you need to use, Scott, in order to be able to properly understand the audience that you're sitting down with?
I think the old adage, you've got two ears and one mouth and two eyes, so use them in the right proportion. And that's absolutely everything that I've done throughout my career, and, you know, with the teams I've managed and try to instill within them. I think having a thirst for what's current and what's relevant, but also seeing what's around the corner and what's about to happen, and no better time than right now to kind of maybe reevaluate where you're looking to go. I think when you know, there's a lot of marketing, you know, B2B marketing has been around for a very long time, but it was just done very poorly for a very long time. And it's only over the last 5-10 years maybe that it's been, you know, it's got its own niche. But also the importance and the relevance of it now is greater than ever. And I think, you know, certainly things like what you're doing with the Business Marketing Club and things like that, that helps everybody to understand the challenges that they're facing and take them back to their own audiences. But I think, you know, if you're looking at the skills, it is being able to adapt and be flexible. I think, you know, certainly, you know, when you're working in-house and you're working with the challenges you have on a day-to-day, you need to have the opportunity to come outside of, you know, of that bubble, as it were, to then see what else is going on, but then also make it relevant, because, you know, the people you're targeting, or your audience, are also consumers, and when you're looking at, you know, the content you're creating, you know, see the content they're consuming in their day-to-day lives and making what you're saying to them relevant to them.
How can people go about acquiring that sort of skill set?
The difficulty in answering that question is I didn't do it on purpose. And one of the things I'm most jealous of is people that like to plan and plan again. I come from the school of Mike Tyson, who says a plan's really good until you get smacked in the face. And then it all kind of goes out the window. So I've always got three different plans going on at any one time. Obviously, on the day to day, we have a huge logistics side to our business and operational, and you know, resources is sadly finite. So those are the challenges we face. But I think, you know, a lot of reading and obviously listening to podcasts and things now, you know, it's never been easier to understand behaviors and what other people are doing, and seeing not necessarily just what the competition doing, but just learn from other industries and other techniques to what you may know. And I guess it's just being open and being flexible, whilst, you know, having that underlining goal and objective that you're trying to go for. But just maybe being open. I don't know what other people may struggle with. I think one of the bigger issues is you know, looking to the mid to long term. Marketing is full of a lot of trends and fads, and it's trying to work out what actually sticks with the consumer, because they certainly don't always have to have the latest thing.
Scott Jackson, Managing Director of 3DI, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
To some great business marketing. Now I'm joined by David Price and Grace Pryor from TML Partners. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Dave.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having us.
Great to see you. So good B2B marketing out there. What's caught your eye?
Well, there's some really, really fascinating, I guess, kind of marketing activity out in the market at the moment, given the current climate and I guess kind of all the macroeconomic issues affecting a whole host of markets. What's been really interesting from our side is to see the, I guess, lean towards bigger picture macroeconomic campaigns really still taking the lead in terms of what's driving agendas across the market. So a couple of examples from my side. I thought, as a reactionary piece to COVID, Flight Plan, which was a joint virtual conference delivered by Apex and Inmarsat around changing a course into the future, no pun intended, I'm sure, around the aviation industry a couple of weeks into the COVID crisis, was a really brilliant timely topical agenda where it was about competition, putting everything aside and just coming together to collectively kind of draw, I guess, kind of thought and breath around what it meant for a sector that was clearly challenged by the climate and everything that was happening with COVID. And I thought the way they kind of went to market in a very timely and thought out manner was fantastic, and is well worth a look in terms of the timescales and how they pulled together such a broadly, I guess, kind of delivered, but then also large-scale global conference completely virtually in such a short space of time. I also wanted to highlight a campaign from a professional services firm that I've admired for a while, which is Pay Consulting, a former firm of yours, Dave. But a recent campaign they've gone to market with around a renewed public sector imperative. And again, I think what's really great about B2B marketing at the moment are these campaigns that are really looking at kind of pan-sector, issues-led narratives, which can then really kind of hone down to a granular level and I guess kind of drive discussions at a real kind of client and actually, I guess, kind of individual level as well. And it's well worth having a look through what PA have done with the Renewed Public Sector Imperative report, and then all of the kind of tangible campaigns and activities they've driven off of the back of that. So two things that I thought really echo what we're seeing from a bigger picture point of view in the market. And I know Grace has got something she wanted to talk about as well.
Yeah, probably quite different on my side, and probably matches with my real estate background, having come from marketing and real estate. But I actually really admire the Marsh & Parsons brand campaign, Matching People with Property, which has been running probably for about 3 or 4 years now. You might remember some of the iterations. One was a rather tanned female bodybuilder with a description that says a desirable new build with exposed iron features. There was also quite a hipster bearded man with an iteration that said a grand and imposing property, luxury carpet throughout. And then last but not least, the very controversial, which is probably one of the reasons that I absolutely love this campaign, was a picture of Theresa May attached with semi-detached awaiting planning permission. Really fun, really out there, quite bold, quite brazen, and just really in keeping with the times.
That's very cool. So what is it about those campaigns that you've flagged there, Grace, that really stand out for you?
I think, first of all, the fact that they have run this campaign over a number of years and absolutely refresh it and make it current every single time, both looking at their audience and who's reading it, but also the macro environment and what's just happening in the news. As I said, they're really quite brazen about it, and they're not scared to do something a little bit different, which might not appeal to everyone. And that should be what marketing is. You know, you can't please all the people all the time, but at least everyone's talking about it.
So with your recruiter hat on, though, because you have the responsibility really for establishing the kind of next generation of marketers in different businesses, has it changed your view of what a great B2B marketing candidate can be?
Absolutely on this one, and appreciate that Martin Parsons is sort of B2B2C, but actually what it's showing is a real wave of people recruiting from outside their sector. So we get a lot of professional services firms that really want to kind of come away from thinking about B2B campaigns, but actually it's about that human to human approach, and it's about really sort of changing the messaging and the tone to appeal to individuals. So actually, you know, creative agencies and more sort of consumer-focused brands are actually sort of on the radar of those naturally more risk-averse professional services firms.
And for you, David, I guess you were kind of flagging the kind of agility needed in a good marketer. So. Is that something that's high up on the skill set that you're looking to seek out when you're after a good business marketing candidate for one of your clients?
Yeah, absolutely. I think fluidity and flexibility is probably more important now than it's ever been. What we're certainly seeing at a senior level is an appetite needed for senior marketers, especially, to roll their sleeves up. Gone are the days where you could have a role, I guess, kind of sitting at a board table, and all you did was strategy and reporting and I guess kind of advising from that perspective. You know, time and time again now we're seeing requirements for marketing leaders to be able to roll their sleeves up and actually kind of get stuck into the tactical execution, as well as think about some of the kind of bigger issues. So that I guess ability to kind of adapt and mold yourself to kind of a variety of roles is really, really important, and certainly where firms go to market and hire, they look for those individuals that have the ability to get stuck in as much as actually put a strategic hat on and think a little bit outside of the box, as Grace has discussed with some of her examples there.
Grace Pryor and David Price from TML Partners, thanks very much. And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Beth Lloyd, Oliver Matejka, Sarah Fernandez, Scott Jackson, David Price, and Grace Pryor. And thanks to you for listening. Please do let us know what you thought of today's podcast. Give us a rating or a review, or drop us a line at businessmarketingclub.org.uk.
And if you've got something interesting, practical, and visionary to share with our listeners, why not volunteer to be a guest on a future podcast? But no pitches, presentations, or promos, please. We're interested in your thinking and your practical examples. And if you have enjoyed the podcast, why not look out in your area for Business Marketing Club mentoring, thought leadership, and events for the B2B marketing community. I hope to see you again. I'm Dave Stevens. Thanks for listening and take care.